might say, well, why is Eric wearing shorts? He's so informal. What is he thinking? What was going on this weekend? The church camp out, so you just be glad I got a shower, you know. So, but it was fun. We had a great time. We didn't get rained on, so that's always fun. But we had this kind of going joke that anytime we do something at Grace Fellowship, it always will rain and there's mud everywhere. But hey, I think we found the right weekend. That first weekend of August seems like rain's not always there. So, and you might see some others that are looking a little rougher for wear. Maybe they just came from the campsite. So, who are some of our campers? 65, so I think it's 58. Do the math. All right. So, happy anniversary. All right, so we have a conference coming up, and I think Jake and Rui were going to come up and share. So come on up, you all.
All right, show of hands. Who is aware of the conference and knows when it's going to be? Most of us. That's good. All right. Let me pull up my calendar. I think it's weekend of the 18th. Nailed it. I got it. All right. Well, I'm up here to invite everybody. Obviously, we're a church family. We're in this together. Can you not hear me? And we're walking out this great mystery that is our existence in Christ. And in the fire department, I go every day. We train every day. But to be a better fireman, I go to extra training. And that gives me more confidence in what I'm doing, and I think as Christians we should be doing that as well. So we're going to be discussing the Holy Spirit, what he's doing in our church, what he's doing in our world, and that's just super exciting to me. I love to hear God speak when he chooses to do so to me, and I get really excited. So I want to expect to see everyone there. There is a cost involved. And I'm not sure how much that is, but $25 a person, okay, is that per day or per the weekend? For the weekend, that's pretty good. All right, and $15 for the dinner. I don't have all the facts, people. I just know it's going to be good and that you should be there. So, right? If that is a problem, though, let us know. We want you to be there. And likewise, if you can contribute to make sure that somebody can be there that can afford that, just let us know as well. We would be happy to receive any donations to go towards those people who may have trouble coming up with that money. We're going to focus, like I said, understanding on what God is doing
this is the day to do it. So please talk to Kay. If you don't have money, promises might work, but money would be preferred. They got to get the stuff. About the other side, most 3/4 of the way or whatever, yeah. You know, I remember Laura's brothers, they one time, and when they were younger, they wanted to dig to China, and so they started digging this pit in the back of their yard, and it still exists to this day. But they didn't quite get to China, but, you know, if you would have dug straight down, you might have ended up where I was. So I was in India and Nepal the last 2 weeks, and it was a joy to see what God is doing there. We don't often get news from Nepal. We don't often get news from India, right? Do you see them in the news very much? Do you see news about what's happening in the church over there very much? Do you know what? God is moving. It is a massive effort over there. When I talk to these pastors, you know, one pastor, he was doing a church and had 5 church plants he was overseeing in the area. And that was just one. So there is a lot of work happening. It was interesting. I was asking them, so how much percent, you know, of India is Christian? You know, and they're like, well, there's the official figure, and then there's the underground figure, or the not the official. And, you know, some of them were saying upwards 10 to 15%, which I had always heard it was like less than 1% or something. So God is at work there. There's still a lot of work left to do, but his church is active. And so what we were doing over there was pouring into these pastors, talking about things that take them out, that would knock them into areas of unhealth or ineffectiveness or burnout. You know, a lot of them, I was hearing one testimony, a lot of them never take time for soul care. And so, if you, you know, parents might know this, caregivers might know this, if you never take time to put the oxygen mask on for yourself, what happens? You die, you fall over. They say that on the airplane. Put the oxygen on so you can help someone else. So we're kind of basically going there saying, reminding, because we all go, yeah, of course you need to put the oxygen on. But then we get going and busy with our life, and we forget to take care of ourselves. And so that's what we were doing. So we had the great joy of reminding, encouraging, exhorting, and doing that sort of stuff. So I'm excited to be back. So that's just a quick summary. I may get a little PowerPoint. One thing that was really fun is the Nepali guys, well, we had a fun night, and they all started dance. The ladies, you do an awesome job at that. Maybe we're just a little shy, I don't know, but these guys were like hooping and hollering and dancing around. It was fun. And you probably couldn't think of seeing me dance, but I was out there dancing a little bit. So it was like, and I'm glad nobody filmed it, because that'd be good, you know, good fodder against me. I know we kind of joked that Tom likes to dance, Tom Russell, but so Tom, you should have gone with me. You could have expressed that side of yourself. So, yeah, but I'll show. I took a little video of it, but it was obviously not me. So, but you'll see some of them dancing. So, well, I'll show that to you down the road here. Well, to get into things, anyone here like race movies? Holly likes the Fast and Furious, those kind of things. I guess those are race movies. They more remind me of when I was 8 years old and I was playing with Matchbox cars, but it's kind of what the Fast and Furious movies remind me of. But, yeah, I recently saw a movie called Ford and Ferrari. Has anyone seen that movie? It was on a plane, and it was one I always thought, oh, that'd be interesting to see, but I didn't want to pay $10 to go to the theater to see it, but it was very good. And what a lot of these race movies do is they give you the backstory of the race, right? They show you the drama behind the race. It's not just the last 10 seconds of the race. That'd be a very short movie. But they give the drama in that movie, Ford and Ferrari. Ford decided they wanted to unseat Ferrari from always winning the Le Mans Speedway race. And Ferrari had dominated that. So they realized they had to build a special car to do that. very unconventional, and a driver that was very unconventional, and it's the story of how that happened. I'll leave it for you to see it, to see how it finished. But you know, often in these movies, there'll be a lot of drama at the end. And a race, it matters what you do during the race, but when is the most crucial time of the race? The finish line, right? It's who crosses the finish line that ends up winning, right? Who crosses it first? And so Paul, in this part of 2 Timothy that we're looking at today, he is talking about the race of life. He is facing the end of his life. This is the last book Paul wrote. He is writing from a place where he is pretty certain that he is going to die, that he is not going to get out of jail, that his trial is not going to go in his favor with the Romans. And so he is pretty certain that his journey is done. And, you know, we often see in movies, too, like people's last words. You know, they mutter something out and then they, oh, you know. What is Paul saying as his last words to Timothy? He is passing that torch. You know, we're talking about a race. Some races are relay races. And that passing of the baton is very crucial. You've seen some where they lost the race because the baton fell. They didn't pass it correctly. Paul's saying, I'm passing the baton to you, Timothy. These are the things that matter most. And I feel like he's also saying to us, and we would do well to listen to what Paul says in these verses. If you and I want to run the race, but not only run the race well, but finish well, because a lot of people, they run the race, but they don't finish well. I'm going to ask you in your circle groups to think about people in your life that have finished well, and what were some characteristics about their life, and what could you emulate about them? Maybe you have seen people in your life, and you say, that one finished well. And we all, I'm sure, could say, I know a multitude that have not finished well. They gave up. They stopped running. They got callous. They got cynical. They left the faith even. So my heart for myself, but also for all of us here, is that we would finish well. And Paul says this. This is a summary I would give of this passage. Finish the race of service well. Finish the race of service well. We've been talking about service this year, and ministry is service. It's not just a profession. We are all called. We are priesthood believers. So all of you have been called to serve the King if you are a follower of Jesus. So Paul's giving us advice here. Finish the race of service well. And I'm going to ask Rui to come up. And Rui, I got the passage here for you. She's going to be reading 2 Timothy 4, verses 6 through 8, here in the ESV version. So let's get that for you. That's amazing. That was the shortest passage you preached on all year. There's a lot there, though. It's so easy to read over this passage and go, well, that sounds good. All right, what's next? Check. Read my passage. As I was kind of camping out, I'm so full of puns, that in this passage this week, there's a lot there. There's a lot in this passage to unpack and to mine. You know, when we unpacked the idea of finishing this race of service well, I saw three areas that especially came out in verse 7. Finish the race of service by striving for the right things. Finish the race of service by persevering to the end. And finish the race of service by guarding the right things. Okay, so let's look at the first one. Finish the race of service well by striving for the right things. In verse 7, Paul says, I have fought the good fight. this analogy is not a military one. This is an athletic analogy. Imagine wrestlers. Has anyone here ever wrestled? All right. I wrestled for part of 1 year. And what kind of convinced me wrestling wasn't for me was I got in the match and the guy put me in a choke hold and the ref didn't call it. And so I felt like I was getting choked out. I was like, that's it, I'm done. But wrestling is tough. If you've ever wrestled, you got to get down to a certain weight. There's weight classes. And sometimes they will run out and go, like, put on the suit and sweat off the weight. You got to get to your weight class for that day. They actually do a weigh-in when you wrestle. Now, that wasn't quite what the Greeks were doing that Paul's talking about. But there was a lot happening. They actually wrestled with no clothes on. I don't think I would prefer that. But he's saying, I have fought the good fight. I have wrestled through life. I have struggled through life. The good struggle. There's lots of struggles we can be involved in. But he's talking here about a certain struggle. Struggling for the right things. As we think about Paul's life, what was his struggle? Tell me, what were some of the things that Paul struggled for? Guys know your word. Tell me. Okay, so you're talking about the actual struggle. So he had a lot of things like shipwrecked, poor, naked. Yeah, he has that long list. But why was he going places? Why did he even bother going out the door to have a shipwreck? What was he about? Spreading the gospel, reaching the Gentiles. Yeah, he said, I labor over the church, right? And if you look at the rest of 2 Timothy, what was the big struggle going on there that we've been looking at over the past few weeks and months? False teaching. He was struggling to make sure that they really got the gospel, that it didn't get twisted in their minds by others or by the world. So he was striving for that. He was also, he says, I beat my body to make it my servant. He was struggling against that fleshy part of us that likes to do what it wants to do. I'm sure none of you experience that. You are always selfless. You always make Jesus Lord and just do whatever he says to you. I'm sure no one here struggles with that. I do. It's an ongoing struggle. You know, I may come to a retreat and I draw a line and say, I'm going to serve you again. Yeah. I could just be a dead sacrifice. Paul talks about being a living sacrifice because a sacrifice is done, it's killed, it's dead. I wish my flesh would just be dead, but a living sacrifice is, they like to get off the altar. When the heat gets up, the living sacrifice goes, I don't want to be on the altar. So it is a struggle to pursue the kingdom of God first, to make Christ-likeness something you're going for. I like how Tim Keller puts it. So I haven't used Tim Keller in a while, so I thought I'd run. Tim Keller quote. He's talking about in 1 Corinthians 9 where Paul's talking about the Christian life is like a struggle. And he says, the Christian should be like an athlete in training. Paul's using a metaphor because athletes in training have to say no to their impulses. So do we have any athletes here? Yes. Abby, do you ever say no to your impulses because you have to go to soccer practice? A little bit, yeah. They have to say no. So athletes in training, those of us who are sitting down to eat, we say, wow, that's a really nice dessert. And we grab it. And athlete says, no, I can't eat that. Or maybe you're invited to a party. Well, I'd love to go to that party, but wait a minute. The athlete says, no, I can't do that because I have to be in bed by 10. So an athlete is constantly saying no to natural impulses of self. And the reason Paul says life is like that for a Christian, Paul uses the word in 1 Corinthians 9, is that the athlete has to exercise self-control. And the word self-control in Greek is the word egokratia, which means ego control. That's the reason why the Christian life is a struggle, because it's a struggle against the demands of the ego, only much larger than what an athlete has to deal with. more cynical, you'll be able to love less and less. You'll just be self-absorbed, self-centered, and always justifying yourself. It's all about you. If that's the case, you will not finish well. Life is a struggle against smallness of soul. It's a struggle to escape the soul and to love. So I like how he puts that. There are lots of causes, lots of things to which we can devote ourselves and struggle. So what are truly lasting ones, and what are worth the effort? We've seen in the book of 2 Timothy that a life dedicated to service to God rather than self and to advancing God's kingdom rather than one's own is worth striving for. That will take a myriad of ways that it's represented. But if you get down to the core of it, are you serving yourself in your life, or are you serving God? Are you advancing your kingdom, or are you seeking to advance God's kingdom? And that can be in your work, in your art, in your friendships, in everything you do, how you use your time, how you use your money. And that is for you. That's a wonderful thing for you to discover. What is God's secret orders for you? What is his calling on your life? You know, it's interesting. I remember when I was a senior, I was at a conference, and I finally got to that point. I said, okay, God, whatever you want me to do, wherever to go, I'll do it. I basically kind of handed him a blank check. And I don't know about you, but it can be scary unless you trust God is good, unless you trust that he wants you to be glorious for him. If you and I do trust him, he will do amazing things. I didn't foresee where he would take me. I had in my mind what I was going to do, and it was quite different the road he has led me on. But he is a good God, and he is worth saying, here's my life. Paul talks here about a drink offering. Do you guys know what a drink offering is? We don't really see that very often. You know, I might have done a drink offering. I was meeting with Malachi on Friday, and I bumped my coffee, and it flew all over me. That was not a drink offering. Now, I almost burned myself. I might have got a $2 million lawsuit but for McDonald's. But that's not necessarily what a drink offering is. My coffee was poured out. But what is a drink offering? Do you guys know what that is from Scripture? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it might seem very wasteful. It's like you just pour it out and it's the Dom Perignon or whatever, the $100 bottle, and you're pouring that out. They're like, you just poured out $100. It's extravagant. And what's interesting is, I just saw here, A.B. Spencer, in his commentary on 2 Timothy, he gave a really good explanation, so I will share this. He says, Paul compares himself to an Old Testament offering, though not a sin or guilt offering, since Christ had already forgiven his sins. Neither is his a fellowship or peace offering, because he knows God is present with him. He describes himself as a drink offering. Drink offerings of wine were combined with meal offerings every day, every Sabbath, every festival at the temple, as together they were presented to the Lord. Paul describes himself presently and already as being such an offering. He is not the one making the offering happen, but nevertheless, by calling himself a drink offering, he sees his life as a gift being presented to God. A gift being presented to God. The eventual giving of his lifeblood is similar to the pouring out of red wine. He's indeed offering his body as a living sacrifice to God. Are you willing to be a drink offering place I ain't never even heard of. What is it even worth it? Are you willing to pour out your life as a drink offering? What is your mission from God? What you think about that? Have you ever thought about that? What is your mission? Paul got that. He said, God said, I'm going to send you before the kings of the earth, before the Gentiles. He's now in Rome, the top tier of that world, of the world in that time. So his mission is coming to a completion. He is going to testify before the emperor and other people. And he's testified many times before other kings. So he knows, I am reaching my mission. Sometimes it's not as obvious. You go, God, I wish you would have knocked me off a horse and told me my mission. Well, we have some things that give us some sense. We have the Great Commission, right? Go into the world and make disciples. We all have been given that mission. So this is not rocket science always to figure this out. So how are you doing at your mission? Are you making disciples? I'm getting a little personal here. I run into this from a lot of folks. They'll say, my mission is to make my kids disciples. And I would agree 100% with you. But then that's your only mission. God's called you to go into the world and make disciples, not just of your children. And here's an idea. This is something that's worked for me. Bring them along. You might say, well, I don't want to go away from my family. Involve your family in disciples. Take your kids. If you truly are trying to make your kids into disciples and you're not doing it yourself, God has called us to be disciples. Disciples. And so you're creating a dead-end disciple if you're not bringing your kids along to make disciples. If you think just pouring knowledge into them, they are going to see what you do, and it's going to be caught more than taught. So live it out. If that's what you're saying God has called you to, do it as a family. Minister as a family out there. Yeah. Yeah. We are called to be making disciples. That is your mission. It can take a lot of forms, but that is the mission of every Christian. Our mission as a church, a people for God who will what? Go into the world and make disciples. All right, so let's get to the second one. Not only do we finish the race of serving well by striving for the right thing, secondly, finish the race of serving well by persevering to the end. Persevering to the end. Paul says in verse 7, I have finished the race. The word there is course. And the way they had races then, it wasn't like cross-country races like we do now where they wind all around. It was a straight line and they had a big pole at the end and you focused on that pole and ran as hard as you could. They didn't have Nikes, they just ran barefoot. I would have been toast. But they had a goal they were going to and persevered to the end. So Paul says, I finished the course that God has set out for me. We are not to stop or to give up until we've completed the course that God has given us. I see some folks with got glory. The involved in disciples. Those are obvious things. The fine nuances of that you'll figure out as you pursue the bigger part of that. God will direct you. So, question for you today. How are you running the race? Have you gotten tired? Have you stopped? Have you given up on the race? Have you started to do a different race? Or are you trucking along at a good pace? I don't know where each one of you is today. But remember how we talked about the Beatitudes at the beginning? If you're feeling like I'm faltering on the race, go back to the beginning of the Beatitudes and say, God, I'm poor in spirit. I got nothing. Help you. We often don't like to ask for help. But the relationship of discipleship is every day saying, God, I need your help. Jesus said, I am the vine, you are the branches. Apart from me, you can do what? Nothing. Being part of him is saying, God, I need you. I need your help to do what you called me to do. He speaks here of those in verse 8 who have loved the appearing of the Lord. That's an interesting phrase. It's looking forward to what is to come that allows us to continue to persevere to the end. I can think of times where I had a really tough thing to do, or I was involved in track and stuff, and if I had the right focus, I could finish. You know, I remember running that mile in track, and you're running as fast as you can, and I would get to that last quarter lap, and then people are starting to pass me. And my legs are burning. They feel like rubber. And it's like you will yourself to run. It's like I'm willing my legs to move. You don't even feel them anymore. And my focus isn't, if I'm looking at the runners around me, I'm going to be toast. I have to focus on that finish line and just truck it as hard as I can toward the finish line. Persevering to the end. Now, I said that we're not in a sprint, but we're in a marathon. But we have to have the right focus if we're going to finish well and persevere. You know, Jesus said, if you build your house on the principles and on me, it will stand even though the waves and wind beat against it. If you build it on other things, it's like sand. Life is tough. If we don't have our focus on the right area on the rock, it will be very tough to finish well. I like how Stott talks about this crown of righteousness in verse 8. The crown of righteousness is awarded to all those who have set their hearts on Jesus' coming appearance. Not because this is a meritorious attitude to adopt, but because it is a sure evidence of justification. Okay, that's a fancy way to say it. He says, the unbeliever, being unjustified, dreads the coming of Christ, if he or she believes it or even thinks about it at all. Being unready for it, he or she will shrink in shame from Christ at his coming. The believer, on the other hand, having been justified, looks forward to Christ's coming and has his or her heart set upon it. Being ready for it, he or she will have boldness when Christ appears. Only those who have entered by faith into the benefit of Christ's first coming are eagerly awaiting his second. I thought that was interesting. So if you love, what it means to love his second coming, it really shows that you and I are justified. That we get Christ. We're not scared of his return. We're ready for it because we have put on Christ. So if this was sobering to me, if you and I never think about Christ's second coming, if we're not even looking forward to it, it would be good to pause and say, okay, do I really get this Christian? Where is my hope set on? And I want you to ask yourself that today. What are you looking forward to? If it's only the next Netflix series, you need a bit higher hope. If it's to your paycheck next Friday, that's all you're looking forward to. That's all you're living for. What a sad hope. Are you living for something that's eternal? You have a mission in life. It will enable you to finish well and to persevere to the end if you have the right hope. So we can finish a race well, a service well, by striving for the right things, by persevering to the end. And lastly, finish the race of service well by guarding the right things. Guarding the right things. He says here, talking about what you said earlier, the gospel. There was false teaching. It was very easy. The gospel was, people were trying to say Jesus and. Jesus and, instead of Jesus only. Paul was greatly involved in guarding the gospel from being distorted by false teaching and guarding it from becoming something else. We too can be tempted to change the gospel. Why is that? Why are we tempted to change the gospel? What are some things that tempt us to change the gospel? Ego. I want something to fit my lifestyle. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. Oh, it can't be that easy. I have to do something. Cultural pressure, right? The gospel is always going to offend. You know, we read the Beatitudes at the beginning. How many of those are values of the world? Does the world value poor and sick? Does the world value mourning? Does the world value humility? Does the world value mercy or hungering and thirsting after righteousness? Those are all antithetical to what the world holds up as awesome. So if you and I are following the gospel, it's going to be countercultural, whatever culture we are in, not only American culture. So it's very easy for us to try to make it palatable and change it in some subtle way. Now, we want to contextualize. What's that fancy word mean? What's contextualize mean? We want to make it relevant or understandable, but in contextualizing it, we don't want it to get changed in such a way that it ceases to be what it is. After the Beatitudes, Jesus talks about salt losing its saltiness hidden under a bowl. You know, he didn't say in there, try to be salt. Try to be light. You are light. You are salt. But beware, the salt can lose its saltiness. And you might say, salt doesn't lose its saltiness. I've never seen salt become unsalty. Well, in their time, they would get their salt from the sea, and it was basically powder. It had sodium nitrate in it. And if the rain, it could wash away the salt, and all you would have left is the powder. It looked like the other salt, but all the salt was gone. It had leached out. And basically, it's only good for road dust to be trampled on by men. So you and I, likewise, if we don't guard the rain of culture, the rain of life, all the things can wash out that stuff, and we just be good for nothing. We've lost or had it removed. So we have to guard the faith, guard what it means to follow the Lord. Martin Luther would say, I preach the gospel to myself every day. And I love it. Jerry gave me this book. It's called A Gospel Primer. I encourage you to ask him about it. He'll get you a copy, maybe even if you want it, or tell you where to get it. It's great. It goes 31 days, and every day is just kind of a focusing on one facet of the gospel, and has all these quotes. I love going through that devotional because it's like, you know, the gospel isn't something I cross the line. Okay, I got the gospel. It's an ongoing thing of life. I need to be preaching the gospel to myself all the time, guarding that faithful deposit that was entrusted to me, or it will tend to get changed in such a way that it's no longer recognizable. So how are we doing in this respect, Grace Fellowship? Are you and I tempted to change or add to the gospel in our day and age? Maybe ask yourself, what way? our hands here just to receive a blessing. Go forth this week doing what it takes to finish the race of service well. Set your mind on striving for those things which are best and which will last for eternity. Set your mind on persevering to the end and not faltering in your race. Set your mind on guarding